This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to...
Hi, honey, I'm home.
Episode 348 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from Shutters Inc. Podcast. And the rude interrupter in the background would be none other than Mr. Glyn Lavender from creativephotoworkshops.com.au. How are you, mate?
I'm back, baby.
Excellent. Did you have a good trip?
I didn't fall over. What are you talking about?
Your trip to the US. Was it enjoyable?
Let me have a think. Parts.
Right. Okay.
Here's the weird thing, though. So what? Probably the best thing of the whole trip.
Yeah.
Is when I was staying in Sacramento for three nights.
Right.
In my hotel room, outside my hotel window, was a Pokemon stop.
Oh, God.
So I could lay in bed. And
tell me you're not playing that.
And I've got three Pikachus coming to my hotel room.
This is why we have no listeners. Level 20.
This is made level 20 today.
Dear, oh dear. I'm happy for you, mate.
So that was one of the highlights.
Right.
Driving on my last day. Oh, excuse me. Tired. On my last day, I was driving back from Sacramento back to San Francisco to fly out. And one of the stores I was working for, they're having a big staff picnic. And I was sort of on the way to the airport. So I was kind of sort of doodling along, aiming to get there the right sort of time for 5:30 for the barbecue, spend an hour or two there, and then head off to the airport.
Right.
But I drove back through this delta of the Sacramento Valley.
Okay.
And past all these great locks and all sorts of stuff. But all these little towns are along this delta were all like 100 years old easily.
Yep.
And they haven't changed much in that 100 years.
And super photogenic.
Yeah. And so there's not lots of empty stores and closed down, but lots of it's got this feel of 50 or 60 years ago.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, like maybe, but maybe what you'd have seen, like the small town America in the 60s kind of would have felt like.
Yeah.
And so whenever I could, I'm driving down mostly back roads along the river anyway, but dipping off even that slightly busier back road into the little townships as I'm going past. And it was fabulous fun.
Yeah, right.
And lots of cool stuff to see. And that was a good day. I had a lot more time off this trip than I normally do when I travel.
Oh, okay.
So normally when I travel, I might do a day workshop and a night workshop and a day workshop and a night workshop. But because it was all sort of put together last minute, I didn't have as much stuff on. So I had a couple of days off.
Nice.
Didn't know what to do with myself.
Excellent.
It's just kind of weird. So I just kind of drove in circles. I just like drove around and didn't have any plan.
Right. I
just drove and aimlessly, and that was kind of it.
Cool.
So yeah, some kind of weird. But I had a good time. I think the people who came along to the events, I did seven workshops. Or seven events, I think they all had a good time.
Yeah, right.
My plan was not to go back to the US until probably next September, October time. But the people I did this stuff for in Sacramento and parts of other areas of San Francisco, they've got six stores in Colorado, and they've got a big anniversary on in April.
Right.
So they want me to come over in April and run some stuff over there in April for their anniversary. So,
right.
So if you're living that kind of region... Mm-hmm. Coming your way in April next year. So
nice.
And I might be heading down to Fort Worth, Texas to help launch a new store as well. So
wow.
For a different mob, those people's.
Gee, spring in Colorado would be lovely, I would imagine.
Oh, fabulous. Yeah, fabulous, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
It could still be a little bit of winter around.
It'd be the tail end of winter.
Yeah, it's a little bit of variable weather. It'd be fabulous. So
yeah, nice.
Look forward to that. It'll be good fun.
Beautiful.
Got to hang out with the Tamron rep for Northern California for a couple of days. That was good fun.
Cool.
A guy I hadn't seen for quite a few years, so it was good. And
I think you were putting the hard word on him to hook you up with a lens or two.
Yeah.
Or six. Did that happen?
Yeah, don't talk about that.
Oh.
I broke one.
Oh, you didn't. You didn't.
Yeah, might have.
Oh, no.
Might have broke one of his lenses. Just a bit.
Whoops.
Just dropped it off a cabinet.
Oh.
He doesn't listen to the podcast, I'm sure.
He doesn't know? He didn't know?
He wasn't there.
Oh dear.
And the worst thing is he's got to buy all his own gear.
Yeah, right.
So I feel kind of bad, but you know, it's all, you know, part of the cost of doing business.
Jeez.
So I had some good fun, and so that was the main thing. Good to be home though. And I had one of those great flights home where I had the entire road to myself, so I could just sort of stretch out and get a good sleep.
What?
Yeah, I got like 7.5 hours sleep on the plane.
Who'd you bribe straight for that?
The plane was mostly empty. It was great. So,
that's awesome. Did you catch the red eye out of LA?
I flew out
of San Francisco.
Yeah, it was 11:30 at night. Yeah, it was just sort of standard.
That's a good flight to be on.
Yeah, sort of standard stuff to get home, and that was good.
Yeah, I didn't plan it this way, but the last time I flew back from the US, I had quite a long day. I had like a 20-hour day leading up to that 11:30 flight out of LAX.
Yeah.
And I swear I got on that plane and I just crashed. And
it's the best way to do it.
I remember waking up and looking at my watch and thinking, hang on, have I already adjusted my watch or something? That can't be right, because that looks like I've slept for 10 and a half hours. And I've looked at the flight map on the screen in front of me and found we were over Fiji and we were only 3.5 hours from home. I was like, woohoo, I can handle that.
God, love that, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So has it been whilst I've been away? Have you missed me dreadfully?
Oh, terribly. No, not really.
Terribly not?
I've actually taken a massive plunge off the edge of sanity.
Oh.
I mentioned this on the last episode of the podcast, but you weren't here, so I'll bring you up to speed. I've been kicking around this idea for about 15 years of trying to get away from Windows without going to a Mac, which pretty much leaves the only viable third option, which is going to Linux as an operating system. And one of the things, and it turns out I've got a laptop that I don't use for work anymore, and I thought, stuff it, I'm going to completely wipe that, I'm going to install Linux on it, and I'm going to start looking at what Linux is like as an operating system and how easy it is to work with. And I had heard that there is an image editing program on Linux called GIMP, which stands for the GNU Image Manipulation Program.
Which you can get for Windows and Mac as well.
Yeah, and I've never played with it, but I'd been led to believe that it was a very similar concept to Photoshop.
Yep.
So I thought the real stumbling block is finding something that is similar to, or at least equal to, Lightroom. And I did a bit of hunting around and tried a couple of non-starters and eventually found a program called Darktable, which does everything Lightroom does and then some, and it's all free software. So I've spent the whole of the last week just spending a couple of hours every day with Darktable, just processing old images and getting my head around the workflow. It's a little bit different, but it's also similar in a lot of ways. So as I mentioned on the last week's podcast, I'm going to, from now through until March or May of next year, whenever my current Adobe Cloud subscription runs out, I'm going to process images on both platforms. So I'll import them into Lightroom on my Windows desktop, which I'm recording on now, and I'll also import them to the laptop on Linux and process them in Darktable. And obviously there's some learning to do. And as I mentioned on the last episode, one of the things that I was having to look into was whether or not there was any potential workflow which would allow me to bring the stuff I've already done in Lightroom across to Darktable and maintain all of the keywords, like particularly the keywords, that's a huge one. Obviously, all the EXIF metadata will travel with the images because I shoot RAW and that stuff's all baked into the RAW files. And this brings me to the first thing that I've got on my list, that there is an option in Lightroom which is not turned on by default. And it's kind of got me scratching my head as to why Adobe made that decision. But and this feature has to be turned on a per catalog basis. So you go to the catalog settings, not just the Lightroom preferences, but you go to the catalog settings, and it's the option that says write all the metadata to external XMP sidecar files. So by default, Lightroom writes all of its metadata to the Lightroom catalog file.
Yeah.
When you tick this option to write all the metadata to these XMP sidecar files, it means that any metadata you've added and edited in Lightroom becomes visible to any other image editing program, which means if you're using Adobe Bridge, you'll be able to see all your keywords in Bridge. And if you want to send, you know, these files to some other program with the XMP sidecar files, that other program will also be able to read all that metadata. And it turns out that even if you've started a catalog and you've already imported all of, you know, in my case, I had 19,000 images in my, you know, family photos catalog.
Yeah.
Once you've activated this option, you can then go and select all of the files in your catalog and go, I can't remember the actual menu option, but there's one that says save metadata. Yeah. And you click on that, and on my machine, it took it about half an hour to go through and write an XMP file for every photo of those 19,500 images. So it cranks through it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And now I can take all of the RAW files with their associated XMP sidecar files over to the laptop, and I can import them into Darktable, and I've done this and tested it, and it works. And all of the keywords show up, and it even supports hierarchical keywords, which is one of the features that I really like about Lightroom. So, yeah, so it's been a very interesting week, a week of learning lots of little bits and pieces here and there. And, yeah, and as I said last week, I will keep everyone abreast of my my journey along this path to see how we go. That's about
a good alternative.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's been very interesting.
Fascinating. I'm thrilled.
I can tell.
I'm consistent.
Yes, you are. The other thing that I saw this week, I don't know, I put a link in here for the IBC, but I can't remember why I put that in there, and I'm sure...
Irritable Bowel Conference.
Yeah. Something like that. It's a trade show.
Why would you have an irritable bowel conference?
Yeah, I don't know. It's an unrivaled global destination for discussion and debate about the many different challenges facing the electronic media and entertainment industry. Anyway, it's happening this month, and I can't remember why I put that in the notes. Probably something will come up later on in the show that will remind me as to why I put that link in there. But the thing that I did see today is that Hasselblad have announced the world's first 50-megapixel mirrorless body.
Wow.
Yeah. So not that we're hung up on the megapixel race, but...
No.
What I thought was interesting was is that there is a Sony announcement coming on the 9th, which... would be, what, later this week? Maybe Friday of this week?
Someday this week.
Yeah. Oh, and I think that's at IBC. I think that's what the link was. I think that's what it was, that the Sony announcement is happening at IBC. And I wondered, you know, whether, yeah, there's been rumours on the SonyAlphaRumours.com website that Sony are going to announce a new flagship A-mount camera.
Oh.
You know, a lot of people have been speculating that A-mount was dead in the water and that, you know, Sony would never say anything and they'd just ignore it and let it just die off, you know. But the rumor seems to be that there is a new A-mount flagship coming as a successor to the A99. And when I saw this Hasselblad thing, I thought, pretty sure Hasselblad buy their sensors from Sony.
They do.
And they do. So I don't know, you know, could be that some of the specs of this thing might appear in a potential Sony flagship camera, if such a thing exists and is about to be announced. So anyway, watch this space.
Yeah, well, or with Photokina coming up sort of in the next week or so.
Ah, of course, that's on soon too.
Yes, yeah, so it starts on the 20th of September. So there's lots of big announcements due to be sort of hitting the shores. And, of course, it used to be they used to wait till the actual show started before the announcements, and now they always announce a couple of weeks beforehand.
Yeah, they're all just leaking out. Yeah.
Yeah, so sometime in the next sort of four, five,
now,
six,
David
eight,
Marland mentioned last week that he had been all hot under the collar for the 5D Mark IV.
Four.
And that he had a conversation with you.
Yeah.
And you shot him down in flames.
Absolutely. And what can I just say? Because I've only looked at the 5D Mark IV today for the first time.
Really?
And what an absolute ridiculous waste of money that is.
Wow. That's harsh coming from the.
Have you seen the
Canon
price of it?
Oh, I can. I haven't.
$5,500 body only.
Australian.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Was it 47? Some ludicrous, over the top, massively ridiculously overpriced price point. And it's $2,000 too expensive.
Do the specs warrant that?
Don't think so. Right. Didn't look at them. Look at the price tag and said that's ridiculous.
Right. Okay.
for a 30 megapixel camera with it's got a bit better dynamic range. It's got a bit better focus. It's got a bit better video. It's got rolling shutter problems on the video, so their big point about being able to do 4K footage and then capture 18 megabyte files off the video, when you haven't got rolling shutter going through them. it's $2,000 too expensive.
Yeah, right.
It's in this market, in this depressed SLR market, people are going to buy it because it's a Canon 5D Mark IV, but it's beyond the price that is, I would expect a reasonable price point to be. It's more expensive than the original 5D when it came out 10 years ago.
Yeah, right.
And things have come down a lot in 10 years.
Yeah. Do you think they're deliberately trying to price it so that only the working professionals will buy it to try and some elitism?
No, because the majority of people who buy these cameras aren't working professionals. The people with too much money. the biggest sales of 5D Mark III didn't go to professional photographers. The biggest sales of 5D Mark II didn't go to professional photographers.
Right.
It went to people who think, if I buy an expensive camera, I'll take better photos.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they don't care who buys the things. They just want volume.
Yeah, I suppose.
Knock $1,500 off the US off the price and you'll start seeing some volume.
Do you think then maybe they're just trying to money grab as quick as they can?
But the problem is, it's going to put so many people off simply because they won't be able to afford it, All the people who might have adopted it as a $3,000 body or even a $3,500 body, but when it's coming up, I can't remember if it was 47 or 55. It was a price that gobsmacked me. I said, that's ridiculous, and didn't bother going any further.
Yeah, because David and I mentioned last week that I think the pricing was $35.99 American. Is that right?
Yeah, so.
And so we were speculating that, it would probably come in around the 4.5 to high fours mark, so.
And then you kit it with lenses and stuff, and you're looking at some stupid volume price, But, I did try and talk David out of buying a 35mm size sensor, not necessarily the 5D Mark IV specifically, simply because of what he needs, what he wants to do and what he needs.
Because he shoots landscapes?
Well, because there's no value in what he's doing. Spending more money on a better camera is not going to make him a better photographer.
Right.
Yeah. Buy some better lenses. Mm-hmm. Spend that money going somewhere interesting to take photos.
Fair enough.
He's already got good cameras.
Right.
Go and take good photos. Go somewhere nice and take good photos.
Fair enough.
Don't spend all your money on a lot of money on an expensive camera and then you're not afford to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Okay, somewhere nice, take photos. Well, come on one of my photo tours. I'd highly recommend it.
Glenn's bank manager highly recommends it.
He does. So that was one of my things for this week is the shock on the price of that damn thing. So,
yeah, right.
Anyway.
Now, I got a little ahead of myself because I wasn't quite finished with the Linux thing. I had a couple of comments from Luke Moreau via the ShutterZincPodcast.com comments.
Hello, Luke.
On the last episode, and he said, glad to hear you've discovered Darktable. That's what I use for some time, and I love it. For Mac users, there's also a package ready to use, basically meaning that there's a Mac version of Darktable. So if you're on the Mac and deciding you want to get away from Mac and you don't want to go to Windows and you're thinking of Linux, then that's an option. You'll probably find out that the XMP files don't import to other programs, I'm afraid. Well, Luke, as I've just recently mentioned, there is a way to do it. If you pursue this, make sure you get the latest versions from the PPA, unless Mint already provides them. Yep, upgraded my PPA and got the latest version, so yeah. Linux people will know what I'm talking about. Nobody else will. Still listening. For panoramas, you have to install... Because I also mentioned last week that this was another thing I would have to look into is, does Darktable or GIMP offer the potential to do multi-image panoramas? Because that's something I like to do every now and again. He said, for panoramas, you have to install Hugin, H-U-G-I-N, and a simple script. Google it. That's how I found it. For import from Lightroom, there might be something, but that's a problem I don't have, so I've never researched it. Yeah, so there. I'm done with Linux for this week. We can move on.
I'm back to 5D Mark IV. I've just popped onto the Canon Australia website.
Yep.
Body only, $56.99.
What?
$56.99.
That is insane.
Or you can get it with a 24-70 for only $8,400.
What? So they want 2.7 for that lens?
Yeah.
They're having a lend.
There's just $5,700
for a body.
For an entry level, a mid level, let's call it at best. Really, it's an entry level pro body. It's not a one series.
No.
The five series cameras were never intended by Canon to be looked at as their top end pro cameras. They're
right.
High end amateur, semi pro cameras for $5,700 body only. It's just
wow,
gobsmacking.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm just going to pull up on here whilst we're looking at that.
And I'm sorry, but $2,700 for a what lens?
A 24-70.
Get out of town.
Yeah, and then drive right back again. Exactly.
I'm sorry, but, I'm sure it's marginally better than one of the other third-party providers, like one of your sponsors who begins with T. But I guarantee it's not worth...
Better than Tamron, the lovely Tamron, my friend. I guarantee
it's not worth three times the money.
Do you know? In fact, it's not. Do you know why? You can buy. Well, it's not. You can buy that lens
from Tamron.
No, that Canon lens.
All right.
By itself from Canon for only $2,400.
Only.
Yeah, bargain. But that makes it more expensive to buy it in the kit.
To buy it with a kit, yeah.
Than it is to buy the body and the lens by itself.
That is crazy. Crazy talk.
It's cray cray.
It is.
And $8,400 for a body with a 24-70. I'm sorry, that's ludicrous.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when I'm quite sure I saw that.
So while I am sitting down,
yes.
What does a 1-series body go for?
Oh, $8,000, something like that.
For the body?
Yeah.
Yay, yay, yay.
But you know, I can understand it's fully waterproofed. You know, it's built of titanium. You could knock a building down with these things. they don't make them in mass quantities because it's a low volume end of the market. So expect that sort of price for a top end working tool. But a 5D Mark IV, which is a glorified point and shoot, might be alienating a few people now. But really, it's just a top end pro-ish camera.
Yeah.
That's a ridiculous price.
Yeah. Wow.
Ridiculous price. And I've got a feeling it's that it is significantly higher than what it can be bought for overseas.
Yeah.
And therefore, they're going to be losing a hell of a lot of sales.
To the grey market.
To the grey market because they've overpriced the damn thing, you know?
Yeah.
So, I'm a little concerned of Ken's sense and sensibilities going around, quite frankly.
Yeah, right. But I just can't get over three times the price of a lens that I know I could go and buy from Tamron for $700 or $800.
Oh, the Tamron 24-70 is like $1,200 or $1,300, something like that.
Well, the Sony mount wasn't.
Really?
I bought mine from Digital Camera Warehouse in Sydney. It's the 24 to 75 or is it 28?
No, so 28 to 75, that's a cheap lens though.
Oh, okay.
The 24
but
to 70.
It's 2.8. It's 2.8 all the way.
Yeah, it's a nice lens, but, it's not, but the 24 to 70's got vibration compensation.
Yeah, well, I don't need that. I have a Sony.
Yeah, I know that, but that's why one of the reasons why your Sony's cheaper.
Right.
Sony mounts cheaper. It doesn't have to have all that built into the lens.
Right.
So here we are. You can buy camera and lens from overseas for $4,400 US.
Right.
So we're paying $4,000 more than that. Is what Canon's asking for.
Well, hang on. You've got a factor conversion of currency into that.
I'm just about to do that. Okay. $4,400 US into Australian dollars equates to 57.68.
Right.
And they're asking 8.4.
Yeah. So another 2,700.
That's a significant difference.
Yeah.
Significant difference. Yeah. In fact, that's $70 more than the body only price they're asking for, and you're getting the 24 to 70. There's something. Now I understand that, you know, we've got things are more expensive in Australia because of all the other the lifestyle we want to have here.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, with our free medical and all the stuff and all the 4 weeks annually.
Cost of wages, yeah.
All that sort of stuff, but it ain't $2,700 worth.
No. Not for that's, every single unit you move.
That's beyond the pale. So protest with your feet, people.
Mm.
Tell them it's not good enough.
Well, it's interesting to hear you say that because you've been very much a flag waver for the retail
Absolutely.
Industry, saying, you know, we need to stop buying grey and support yep. our local businesses.
Absolutely. And unless the local business want to bend you over. and run your wallet up the flagpole, shall we say? there's reality. There's realistic pricing differences that can be justified. Like our 10%. I mean that price, that US price, doesn't have tax on it. As an example,
right?
So you could add. Yeah, you add 8% tax or whatever it is to that. That makes a difference
because it varies from state to state over there. Doesn't
exactly.
It? Yeah,
there's still not $2,700 difference in price.
No. You know?
I could wear $1,000 difference.
Yep.
I can't wear $2,700 difference.
No.
Yeah. I think that's unrealistic to expect anyone to. Once again, if you're paying $8,400 for what is essentially a mid-range 35mm sensor camera, remember they've got two 5Ds above that, and the 5DS and the 5DR. There's two models above it still.
Oh, are they considered to be higher up than the...
Yep.
Right. Okay.
Well, then 50 megapixel instead of only 30 megapixel.
Right.
So, crazy, crazy, cray, cray. Totally cray. Anyway, enough of Canon bashing for... What else have we got? Anything exciting?
Okay, so two episodes ago, I had Steve Peters sitting in the chair for you.
I heard the first minute.
And we...
Because someone said something nice about me on Facebook, so I thought I'd better go and check it out.
Oh, right. And you got that far and then you tuned out.
Pretty much. Yeah,
right. So we were talking about drones, and Steve brought up, you know, this story about a drone hitting an airplane in London and yada, yada, yada. Then Greg sent me a comment after that episode saying, can you stop with the rubbish about, you know, a drone hitting a plane? It never happened. It was debunked, yada, yada, yada. So last week when David Marland was sitting in the chair for you, we addressed that and I explained that, you know, we had made a mistake, and Greg wrote back again and said, thanks for sharing the drone information on the show. Also, I just ordered the Landscape Photographer of the Year book, which David Marland made reference to last week, Collection 8 for $9 on Amazon. Other years are $45. So,
wow.
Yeah, so excellent, Greg. Let us know if you enjoyed the book when you get it. I'm sure you will.
I did see an article this week about an 8-year-old girl playing golf knocked out a drone out of the sky with a golf ball shot.
Wow.
So,
that's awesome.
That could be just PR. Who knows?
That's Tiger Woods kind of accuracy.
It's good accuracy. It's great. unless she was trying to aim completely the opposite direction.
Yeah.
But still.
Oh, dear. Steve Peters sent us three stories via Facebook. The first was... Make photos that others hate. And I had a quick read through this. I didn't get to read all of it, Steve, but I did read some of it. And there was a great line that I saw. The more active we are on social media, the less likely we are to take risks. And this was all in relation to the if we spend a lot of time publishing our photos to social media, we essentially bring ourselves into the commonality of photography that is evident on social media, and we restrict our ability to be creative because we become obsessed with how other people perceive our photography, and hence the title of the blog post, Make Photos That Others Hate. He was basically saying, forget social media, get out there and just shoot what works for you. And maybe don't even share it on social media, you know, if that's what it takes to, you know, keep you sane because, you know, you don't like the negative comments or whatever, then do it. And he raises the point in this blog post, it's written by a guy called Eric Kim, that he got to this point where he felt like he was losing his creativity because he was always obsessed with the comments, you know, and the likes and dislikes on social media for the photos that he published, that he decided, nah, screw it, log off Facebook, going to go off and shoot a project of my own, and it just happened to be with a girl. So he shot all these photos with Cindy in a style that he liked, and then somewhere along the line, people saw these images, even though he wasn't posting them to social media, and the universal response was, mate, these are epic, you know, this is some of the best stuff you've ever done. And he believe
he might have got that response if he put them up on the Facebook straight away.
Well, who knows? Who knows?
But I agree. I mean, but at the end of the day, please yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just make yourself happy. So, you know, put photos on the internet if you want to, of course. But it doesn't mean anything.
But don't let that dictate your style.
But no, that don't make people think you're any good. The amount of people you see, oh, you've got amazing skills. Oh, you're an incredible photographer. Yeah, Facebook does that. It makes everyone tell you you're the world's best photographer. You're not.
No.
None of us are. We're all crap. Yeah? But you look at this stuff and people who have no idea between a good photo and a bad photo are making comments on it.
Yeah.
People couldn't judge a good photo if it fell out of a photo album and smacked it in the face. Yeah? But they're judging people's work. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, put them on social media, but just enjoy it yourself. If you like it, you like it. And that's enough.
Yeah,
it's enough. You don't got to do competitions. You don't got to be judged. You don't have to have other people, you know, say how good or how bad they are. If you like it, great. I doubt you will. I doubt you'll like it because none of us really do. We all want to be better. We all like it to a degree.
Yeah.
But we all know we wish it could be better, and that's not a bad place to be.
Absolutely.
Always wanted to get better. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Be happy.
Definitely.
Ish.
Steve's next story was from Format magazine, and this was Why I Think Film Photography is Horrible. And Steve only posted this this afternoon, so again, Steve, my apologies. I've not had a chance to read all the way through it. But basically, the guy that's writing this, Benjamin Kanarek, he started shooting film in the in the analog days and has obviously, like the rest of us, transitioned to digital. And he was saying, you know, he likes the fact that digital is a much faster feedback loop. You know, you get to work out what worked and what didn't work almost instantaneously, where with film, you know, days, weeks, even months could go by before you got the images back. And by then you've got no EXIF metadata. So unless you actually took notes with a notebook, you've got no idea of what shutter speed you used or what aperture you used. All you've got is a neg of film or a slide or, you know, whatever. So, and he said that he's seeing a trend these days of kids going back to shooting film, and he doesn't understand it. He said, I don't understand why they're doing it. They've got it so good.
Do you know why?
Why?
Because he's an idiot.
Just sugarcoat that for me, mate.
I was having this discussion today, funny enough.
Yeah. About?
With my young model, who likes to take photos and likes to use film.
Right.
And I agree with him in lots of ways in that the feedback loop, blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
And as a working tool, it makes a lot more sense to use digital.
Yeah.
But these kids have grown up in a world of instant gratification.
Yep.
Oh, I've heard about the new game. No, what new game? Let's download the new game. Here's the new game. There's the new game. Start playing.
Yep.
Yeah. Everything happens straight away.
Yep.
Digital straight away. Music. Oh, I've heard the new song. No, I've downloaded it. Here it is. Bang.
Yeah.
Everything's immediate.
Yes.
This is something they have to wait for.
But why would they like that?
Because it's different.
Right.
To everything else. Everything else, they get instantly.
Yep.
They don't have many things in life that they can have delayed gratification with.
Right.
Okay. So to me, this is a lot about delayed gratification, more so than, oh, how fabulous is film. It makes the photos look so much more filmish. Yeah. It's this. I reckon there's a lot of the psyche is about delayed gratification.
Okay.
And I said to the model, I said, film holds nothing to me whatsoever. I have no interest in film whatsoever. A, because I've been through all that.
Yep.
B, the biggest, every photo I take, I know what it looks like before I take it anyway.
Yeah.
So there's no surprise when the film comes back because it's exactly what I expect it would look like anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. For better or worse. So there's no, oh, wow, when the film comes back, there's none of that joy because I know what the photos look like.
Yeah.
I said the only way I would ever use film would be if I was to shoot out-of-date or fogged film, light fogged film.
Right, yeah.
Because then you're getting back results with colour shifts and light leaks and weird stuff.
Unpredictable results.
Exactly. So it's the unpredictability that would be where the interest would lie as opposed to anything else.
Yeah, right.
But I really think, yeah, why do people go, he doesn't understand why? Well, the simple reason, I reckon, is the psyche of delayed gratification.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
because for a generation that's never had that, I don't understand why that would be an appeal.
Because it's so different.
Yeah, I get that it's different, but they've never had to wait for anything. Why would they choose to wait for something?
Why are they all starting to buy vinyl?
Because vinyl sounds better.
No, it's because they have to make an effort. It's slower.
Yeah.
It's pain in the bum. It's not mobile.
Nope.
It's not portable. It's all the stuff, basically, it's the same tactile, delayed, slow thing as film.
Okay. Better liner notes.
Better liner notes, yeah. But you see, there's a lot of similarity between those two things.
Yeah,
okay. In my book.
Cool.
What's our mate Tony White been saying?
Oh, hang on, there's a third one from Steve Penis.
No, it's not.
Oh, hang on. No, there isn't. I've copied it twice. Why did I do that?
You're an idiot.
So, thank you.
There's that sugarcoating again.
Yeah. So Tony White sent us a link via the Facebook wall, and this was how Lightroom's performance has varied over versions 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and Creative Cloud.
Yeah.
And this is very interesting, and you sort of scroll down the blog post
Can I just clarify this very interesting?
Yeah.
Very interesting for you or for normal human beings?
I'm obviously not a normal human being.
Well, you're an audio engineer, dude.
What this guy did was on his Windows 10 machine, he built a catalogue of 280-odd photographs, and he's got every version of Lightroom installed on the same machine.
Of course he does. Yep.
And this just quietly is a kick-ass machine. He's got a Core i7 Intel processor running at 3.5 gigs with 32 gigs of RAM, 64-bit operating system. So it's a meaty computer, two SSD drives. And so what he's done is he's created this catalog in all of the versions of Lightroom. And in each instance, he's used the final dot release of each of those versions. So 2.7, 3.6, 4.4, 5.7, 6.6.1, and Creative Cloud 2015 6.1. What was interesting is that the import time, right, the time it takes to import all those photos into a catalog in Lightroom has sped up with every release. But the time required to build the one-to-one previews has actually doubled.
Hmm.
Okay, fine. We'll move on. The link's in the show notes for anyone that wants to read it.
Just
what do you got?
I can imagine you and this bloke going out for dinner together and become the world's best buddies. But what, dude? Get a life. Sitting there doing who knows what for how long with how many different versions of Lightroom to see there's a nano friggin' second difference between them? Come on.
Okay.
This guy should go back to film. Forget about your nanosecond. Oh, it's gone from 0.616 of a second to 0.615 of a second. Right there, in one simple blog post, everything that's wrong with the world.
Right.
In my book. Come on, really? What's the point? What's he trying to say? How's he changing the world by going through this?
What are Adobe
going to do different? Because this guy's gone, oh, do you realize your one-to-one previews are now taking a little bit longer in Adobe Lightroom CC. I'm sure this is how he talks. Adobe Lightroom CC. They did in Lightroom 2. Now, I think if we shave off some of the quantum mathematics variables, we might find that we can shave somewhere in the region of 2.2 or 2.3 nanoseconds difference between each image build in the one-to-ones as opposed to that one-to-halves.
Okay. What do you got on your list?
Nothing. After that.
Better be bloody good or I'll rip it apart.
I've got nothing. Nothing good. But I did get a lovely email whilst I was in the US from a guy called Doug Gimsey.
Right.
And Doug took out the Australian Geographic Nature Photographer of the Year Impact Award.
Oh, nice.
And the Impact Award was photographing a dead kangaroo at the side of the road.
Yeah.
On Kangaroo Island, where he's trying to show the impact of traffic on the wildlife. On the kangaroos. Yeah, now, right. The reason he emailed me is I taught him how to light it.
Nice.
So he employed me for a day on a one-on-one and he emailed me saying, thank you, I couldn't have won this award without you, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, so that was kind of cool. And, yeah, it's a kind of a bleak shot of a dead kangaroo by the side of the road. But it's but he succincted the story very well. He really took a long time to try and – he spent months planning this image to try and tell. So he's got this dead kangaroo, this speed sign, and then a car – part frozen with flash,
yep.
And also just the rear tail lights disappearing in the distance to show speed.
Yep.
I think in three elements he's told the story exceptionally well.
Absolutely.
And I think once again, distincting. If you're trying to tell a story and trying to get as many people as possible to understand the story, you have to use as few words as possible.
Yeah.
And he's said that in extremely few words. So I thought that was kind of nice.
Yeah. Well done, Doug.
Yeah, and lovely that he thought to let me know.
Yeah.
And then whilst I was on the Australian Geographic site looking at this thing, because my daughter subscribes anyway, so I got the magazine and saw it printed in the magazine.
Oh, okay.
But I thought I'd get the link for tonight. And whilst I was on there, I came across this thing where I always like to say is to learn how to use objects to show scale.
Yep.
Now, you put a person in front of a tree, you get a feel for how big the tree is.
Yeah.
You know? So I was just in Northern California where they've got the giant redwoods, and they've got that one where there's a hole in the tree where you can drive a truck through it.
Yes, I've been there.
Yeah, and that gives you a feel, of course, for the scale of the tree.
Yep.
Well, then I found this thing of a NASA video of Mercury transiting in front of the sun.
Right.
And Mercury is tiny.
Yeah.
It is such a visual clue about how big the damn sun is.
You know? Yeah.
And it's only a middle-sized star. But it was just this wonderful... wonderful example of using something to show the scale of something else.
Yeah.
When you can have a whole planet look like a speck of dust going in front of it.
Yeah, nice.
It was very cool. When I was in the US, I got to have a quick look at before announced the new Tamron 150 to 600.
Nice.
Just has been announced. And but why I bring it up, other than the fact that Tamron lenses are fabulous, did I mention Tamron? Tamron is good. Tamron.
Unbreakable lenses.
Breakable. If you're most people don't seem to have the problem I have. But one of the things that I found is that Tamron have introduced a new axis to their image stabilization, their vibration compensation.
Oh, okay.
So they now includes forwards and backwards movement, not just up and down, side to side.
Oh, lovely.
So, you know, if you can imagine if you're like doing macro or something, you're moving a fair bit backwards and forwards and being unsteady, is taking that movement into account as well.
Right.
Which is kind of cool.
Do you know what grabbed me most about this lens?
No, it's sexy colours, how good it looks.
The shape? Yeah. Because
Sweet-looking lens.
It is a really nice-looking lens, but in all of the lenses that I have seen in that sort of size range, like from everything from your 70 to 210s upwards,
yeah,
I've never, not that I recall, have I ever seen a lens where the flare out from the, you know, general diameter of the body out to the full size of the front element.
Yeah.
I've never seen it curved like that.
No.
They're usually just stepped, you know, they're stepped.
Yeah.
And I just thought, wow, that really looks different.
It's a good-looking lens.
Yeah.
And, of course, Tamron have now got this little USB connector where you can connect your lens to your computer to do all sorts of adjustments to it. And one of the things I like about it, and I think this would be really handy if you do a lot of macro stuff, and you do the same with the macro lenses, is you can program in its focusing range.
Oh, okay.
So let's say I only ever do macro.
Yeah.
And I only ever photograph in this one zone of between 1 centimeter and, say, 5 centimeters, let's say, away from the subject.
Right.
You could program the lens to only have that focusing range.
Oh, wow.
Which, of course, would speed up its focus
ability. But this is not a macro lens. You're just referring...
No, but this is available on all of their new series lenses. This USB right. connector will work with all their new SP lenses.
Right.
So I thought, yeah, very, very cool idea to be able to limit. And once again, with this sort of, you know, if you're only ever shooting this 600mm lens at just about infinity,
yep.
Well, if you take off its ability to go anywhere else as far as hunting when it's trying to focus, yep. It's going to speed up focus a lot as well, you know?
Yeah.
Which is going to be a boon for wildlife photographers. So.
For sure.
Yeah, so I thought that was pretty cool.
For those that are interested, this will be coming out in September in Japan in Nikon and Canon mounts at the price of $13.99, presumably American dollars.
American.
Nice.
But here's the thing, with the fabulous Tamron, I mentioned Tamron, great Tamron, mm-hmm. Their prices lenses, worldwide, yep. They're worldwide are not the same massive difference in price that we just talked about earlier.
Right.
So even down here in Australia, that $13.99 won't translate to 2,700 Australian.
Right.
It might be $15.99 or $16. Yeah, it's going to be pretty good, I would imagine.
Yeah, right. And a little further down in the story, it says that there is a Sony A-mount version which yep. will be delivered at a later date.
Absolutely.
Gosh.
And another advantage of this new lens is they've now introduced two new teleconverters to go with it.
Oh, okay.
So they've got a 1.4 and a 2x teleconverter.
Oy, oy, oy.
And once again, in the same sweet design and construction as the lens and all the new SP lenses, which is, I'm going to say, it's a beautiful, incredibly solid construction. Even I'm going to struggle to break these ones. I'm going to try, of course. Yeah, in for the long haul. But yeah, they so to be able to have this 1200mm lens is going to be quite sweet, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
You put that in a crop sensor body, you're up to the 1600mm.
Yeah.
And the last thing I mentioned, Tamron. The last Tamron thing I came across was that Tamron have filed for a patent for a new 115mm 1.4 lens.
Whoa.
So, A, unusual focal
that
length.
Would be one sexy portrait lens.
It wouldn't it, though, hey? 115mm 1.4, very sweet. So,
yeah, it is. It's an odd focal length, as you say.
It is an odd focal length. There's obviously some reason for that.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, they would have gone to 105 or 135 or something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I'm looking for that. I could imagine that's not going to be out for another year or so, but you never know.
Yeah.
Could be a sneaky surprise at Photokina. You just never know.
True.
And the last thing I've got on my list is I came across this free university course on photography.
Right.
It was done by an American guy.
Yeah.
Mark
Lavoy.
That's right. He did this in America, and then he also went and did it for Google as well. Now he's made it and all the videos and everything. So it's like 18 lectures available on video. There's all sorts of in-depth information plus practical exercises to do. So I thought, well, if someone wants to put something a little bit more significant together without paying any money.
It's interesting that you bring this up because last week we had a story about, I can't remember who submitted it now, but it was essentially saying that photography schools are a really bad idea.
Yes, I
and
agree.
And that, you know, you're much better off doing a workshop, which is a lot more focused and, you know.
And an urban mind probably.
Yeah, and financially a lot less of a commitment, you know, and because it's a shorter term thing, you can get out and practice it straight away. And I kind of agreed with a lot of the sentiment in that particular blog post about photo schools as a concept. And you know, here's this guy, he's gone and put up this whole website of all this stuff for free.
I don't know. I mean, it depends on the school. I don't want to give a blanket.
Yeah, for sure.
Put it this way, simply having a diploma in photography doesn't mean anything. It's not going to get you anywhere. It's not going to make you anything. But if you learn whilst you're doing that diploma how to light well, how to post-process well, how to, and here's the most important bit, how to find and generate business, and how to run your business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if all those things are incorporated, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but yeah, knowing how to generate business and how to keep the business running are vital things to learn, not just how to take pretty photos.
Yep.
So the problem is a lot of people go out and they do lots of workshops and learn how to take photos. I've got no idea how to find a customer, build a customer database, and maintain a business.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a delicate balance. But I agree in a lot of ways. I have people come to my workshops have been to, you know, 2 or 3 years into a four-year degree and still don't know hardly anything.
Really?
As far as actually lighting and understanding how stuff works.
Yeah, right.
Either, yeah, so it's a delicate balance. I think like anything, you find the right teacher. Whether it's a university or workshop, whatever, that's going to do you well. If you have the wrong person doing that, it doesn't matter what you're doing, it's still going to be bad.
Yeah, so, true.
Yeah. So that's all I had, my friend. I got nothing else. I have sweet nothing else this week, and I'm going to make myself a cup of tea.
Yeah.
And
so what are you going on for the rest of the week?
You know, I've got two workshops at the end of the week, two how to use your camera workshops.
Yeah.
It's crazy week. That means I'm working 3 days this week.
After that, you might even know how to use your camera, mate.
I might need a break after that. Then I've got another one-on-one next Tuesday.
Yeah.
And I think I'm done for a little bit. I've got a little bit of slack time.
Nice.
Rest. I'm tired. I've had a long, hard week working like multiple days in a row and stuff.
Well, this Friday night, I'm going to leave work and head up to my mate Dave's place. Where I'm just crashing the night, and then Saturday morning I'm heading out to Orange, which is about 3 hours' drive west of Sydney, to meet up with Jaden and Beck, whose wedding I'll be shooting in October.
All right.
And going to check out the vineyard where they're getting married, just have a bit of a squiz around so I know what I'm in for. Have a yarn with them. I think Beck has to work, but Jaden's got the day off on the Saturday, so we'll catch up and have a yarn and sort out a few bits and pieces about how the flow of the day will go, and then head back to the Central Coast on Saturday night. So
nice.
Yeah.
Nice to get away a bit too.
Yeah. So I'll take the camera with me and might see something along the way that I can stop and grab a shot or two.
We expect to see some. Now, no pressure, but now,
right?
Now you said it.
Yeah.
I want to see Facebook littered.
Yeah.
No, actually, don't put them on Facebook because you know, you're not pandering to other people's likes.
No.
You just to satisfy yourself.
That's right.
And me to have a laugh.
That's right.
All that matters. There was one other thing I did this week, which I forgot to mention.
Oh, yeah.
So on Saturday evening just gone, we held in Melbourne the inaugural and also the first
People
with Cameras event with me and Fujifilm and Think Tank Photo and Lucky Straps and a few other people doing stuff.
Were there people?
We had, I'm going to say, between 250 and 300 people.
Nice.
And everyone got split into groups. It was really well organised. Everyone was to arrive at a certain point. We have a little introduction. Then everyone got an email at a certain time, which explained what the theme for the night was. So no one knew what the theme was. Everyone had to break into groups of six people, even if you'd never met them before,
right,
and then go out and photograph on the theme.
Oh, nice.
Then everyone had to choose, go through the photos they'd taken. They had 1 hour to go and take photos. Everyone had to go through the photos they'd taken and choose the winner of their group. And then the winner went, all the groups went and got judged by the two judges
right.
As the best one of the whole bunch. Now, I'm pleased to say that when the crowds, the groups were trying to decide the best photographs, a few were having some major problems. Everyone liked the six photos and they all thought they were the best. So I went around and I offered my critique, my instant critiques, as I do, on everyone. And I chose one photo in each group. Mine came first and second.
Right.
So out of all the groups, there's like 20 groups.
Yeah.
I looked at three. Pick two images out of the groups and bang and bang. So it's just because I must know what I'm doing. Yeah, I basked in the reflected glory of their joy, basically.
Right.
Yeah. And then Fuji took them all out for dinner afterwards. So we were all going out. Well, there's people who helped out were going out for dinner. But they took all the winners out and their groups out for dinner as well, which I thought was really nice.
Nice. Yeah,
it was a good night. So there's going to be more. And I'm going to be involved in more of the planning stage for next year's to do even more better stuff.
Yeah, nice.
I met up with the lovely guy from Think Tank here in Australia, who's just a lovely guy, called Simon Pollock.
Right.
Just a nice guy. So we had a good evening, and there's going to be a lot more of these things. So,
do you know, it strikes me that in this era where, you know, retail stores are struggling.
Yeah.
And we live in such a social media rich kind of world where we're always attached to some form of social media, mostly through our phones, that this type of event makes perfect sense because it is far more social.
Yeah.
And it's not about necessarily selling you a product and, you know, you've walked into my store and I'm not letting you leave until you're carrying a shiny new box, you know. So good on them for that.
Yeah, and it was promoted by all the major camera stores in Victoria too.
Nice.
So they had, and there was actually members of the staff of those stores that were free. They came along just to have fun and be involved in the project too. So it was good. It was a nice all round thing.
Excellent.
So keep an eye out for more.
Will do.
And all right, mate. Having said that, let me say this. Night.
Bye. Oh, almost forgot. One last thing before we go. David Marlin's book review. Take it away, David.
Recently, I went out with a group to do some landscape photography. There we all were with our fancy SLRs and our nice big lenses. And, of course, one member was there with her simple compact. You know, one of those lesser photographers. But at the end of the day, when we compared our shots, hers were by far and away the most interesting shots of the lot. They were quite different. I think it was Ansel Adams or someone like that said that the most important part of the camera is the 6 inches behind it. CJ Chilvers has written a book, A Lesser Photographer, and it looks at that 6 inches behind the camera. Its subtitle is Escaping the Gear Trap to Focus on What Matters. And I guess another way you could put it is, cameras will always improve, but will you? CJ at one point realized he was obsessing about the gear he was shooting with rather than focusing on his approach to taking photos. He offloaded his DSLR and all its lenses. He offloaded his 4x5 view camera and bought a compact camera. He started blogging his experience and called it A Lesser Photographer to refer to the looks he got from other photographers when he showed up to shoot with his little compact. This book is a collection of his blogs. You can have a look at his more recent blogs at cjchilvers.com. The book itself is short 1 to 1.5 page commentaries on these sorts of issues, and it really questions whether you really need that extra bit of gear, thinking it's going to miraculously improve your photography, or you're better off putting more effort into improving what you do with what you've got, and maybe improving yourself. Here's a couple of examples. The garbage can is the most important tool in the darkroom. Be liberal with your use of the trash. It's your friend. Another, the best critiques are not about the image's technical properties. The best critiques question why the photograph was created in the first place. Sounds a bit like the critiques I'm hearing on Shutters Inc. Another one that's quite neat is a gift guide for photographers, the sort of thing to photocopy and put up on the fridge to suggest to your families what they could give you for Christmas. Number one, education through workshops. Learning by doing. That sounds very familiar to me. Number two, travel to get some experience. Number three, give books, but be very discriminating about those. And number four, give the photographer in your life some time so they can go out and shoot more and learn more. The book is a Craft and Vision ebook, and it'll satisfy your gear lust. It costs $5 US to download. Slip it on your smartphone and have a look at it when you need to.
ShutterZincPodcast.com.
AnotherAudioTo.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZincPodcast.com.